Okay, good morning. I call this Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. The time is 9:06 a.m. We are meeting in the Denali room of the Anchorage Legislative Information Offices building. Please silence your cell phones so we don't have any interruptions. This is Representative Carpenter. I'm serving as chair. We have the following members present in the room with us: Representative Josephson, Representative Vance, and we have a number of members online. Senator Kaufman, are you online?
Roger that.
Senator Wilikowski, are you online?
Yes.
Representative Johnson, are you online?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Tomaszewski, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Representative Kronk, are you online? Senator Bishop, are you online? Senator Kawasaki, are you online? Senator Hoffman, are you online? Senator Stedman, are you online? Okay. With that, we have quorum to conduct business. Our first item on the agenda is to approve the minutes. Senator Kaufman, may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I motion that we approve the minutes.
Is there any objection to approving the minutes from the previous meeting? Hearing no objection, the meeting minutes are approved. Okay. First item for the committee here is to for a presentation of RPL 18-2024-0351 from the Department of Environmental Conservation. We have, let's see, looks like I don't see Alexi in the room, so he's online. Director Painter, are you online? Can you hear me?
Mr. Chairman, I'm online. Yes, I am online.
Thank you, Director Painter. So you're going to present this RPL to us by phone. Please take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So we have one RPL today. It is RPL number 18-2024-0351 for the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Air Quality Appropriation and Allocation. This RPL is for $900,000 of federal funds, code 1002, and is an operating budget RPL. So by way of background, DEC received a $3 million federal grant to conduct the Community Emissions Inventory Project. This grant was awarded in May of this year, so it was too late to be included in the state budget this year. The agency reports that this project will expand the available community emission inventory data for criteria pollutants and greenhouse gases and will culminate in community-level breakdowns of source data, methodology, and estimates. It will also include an online geospatial dashboard and modeling tool. This RPL expands federal receipt authority in air quality appropriation and allocation from $2 million to $2.9 million. The agency plans to accept the full grant amount of $3 million over a four-year period that the grant runs. So that will require additional receipt authority in FY25 and is expected to be part of the governor's budget for that year. The agency estimates that they need $1.1 million of federal authority this year. They have $200,000 of existing authority that they can use for this, and then this RPL has $900,000 to get to that $1.1 million. And Legislative Finance has not seen technical issues with this RPL. It fits within the existing activities of this division and expands an existing fund source, so we really don't see any technical problems.
Okay, thank you. Is there discussion from the committee on this RPL? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some questions. I don't know if it's Alexi can answer this or the department, but I'm wondering if this RPL is required to fulfill any statutory requirements.
Ms. Chairman, I think if the department could answer that one, I think they could probably handle that better than I could.
And do we have anybody online from the Department of Environmental Conservation? I'm seeing here that maybe Megan Kohler is online.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman.
Good morning, Megan.
This is Megan Kohler, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Brett Vance, thank you for your question. At this point, there is the intent of this accepting additional federal dollars will provide better baseline data for us. We currently don't have good baseline data for these areas. And without this baseline data for future funding opportunities for communities, they will not necessarily be eligible because we don't have the data for their application.
Follow up, Representative Vance.
What baseline data is going to bring added value to these communities that would be utilized with this grant?
And Ms. Kohler, just for the record, we're having a little bit of difficulty hearing you. So if you could adjust your phone or speak into your phone, bring it closer to your mouth or something. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Thank you, Chair. Is this better?
That is better. Thank you.
No problem. Through the Chair, Rhett Vance, this will be for greenhouse gas emissions as well as additional criteria pollution. I apologize, I am. The ability to understand kind of what the air quality looks like in those rural communities.
Follow-up.
Representative Vance.
Has there been an overwhelming concern by the department about air quality in a lot of these other smaller communities throughout the state?
Through the chair, Rep, that is, I think, the ability to have better data in our smaller communities allows us to understand the widespread or kind of on a more granular level what the data looks like.
Any other questions?
No further questions, okay. Mr. Chairman, but I'm struggling with the need for these federal dollars and getting this baseline data. What I have seen from a high-level view is that the federal government has used information that has not been helpful to Alaskans. And the example that I'm thinking of is Fairbanks is struggling with being able to have a variety of means to be able to heat their homes because of air quality pollutants that the federal government deems is too harmful. And I definitely want good air quality, but I'm concerned that this granular level of information may not be as helpful to Alaskans right now. And I don't support moving this RPL at this time.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions from members who are online?
Yes, this is Representative Tomaszewski. I have a question.
Representative Tomaszewski, go right ahead with your question.
Thank you. So does this funding come with any strings attached, meaning is it going to create or have any future obligations for the state to continue this type of funding?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. No, we do not anticipate that there are any additional requirements of from this this grant. This data will provide baseline data that we currently do not have, so that communities will be able to request funding through what we anticipate is future federal dollars for projects relating to greenhouse gas and emissions.
Okay, thank you.
I'll take a brief at ease. Okay. Took a brief at ease to double check my understanding of some things here. I thought I heard something online. Is there another question or a comment online? Okay, hearing none. Representative Josephson.
Well, I haven't reviewed this in the way I'd like to. But just looking at the purpose, I see that the state has done this kind of work before. Looks like starting with Governor Murkowski in 2005. I think that would have been Governor Palin. No, I think that's Governor Murkowski. It's not obvious. This is an administration request. So Governor Dunleavy wants us to approve these funds. We know that the governor has, there's a new renewable portfolio standard bill that he's been working on. I think this is designed to get a greater sense of what's achievable in the state. That's why they want the baseline data. We've heard that there's no strings attached, no further requirements or contingencies. And I would ask that the RPL be adopted and approved.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Any other comments from members online?
Yes, this is Representative Johnson. I have a question.
Representative Johnson, go right ahead.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out exactly is what's the opportunity cost of not approving this? I mean, is there things in the future that this is all tied to that we have to know more about? I mean, that we need to have this in place to go forward with any, you know, other types of research or projects or receive other monies, or is this just a one-time survey goes into some unknown data and is maybe looked at in the future, maybe not, but if we don't do this today, do we have another opportunity to look at it? I haven't had a chance to look at it as much as I would like to either.
So before I turn, ask Director Painter and maybe Ms. Kohler to respond to that, I'll just remind public and ourselves that this RPL process and the request for authorization for an additional $900,000 in receipt authority is at what we are approving at this point is an immediate authority to do so, or assuming for in the event that we do not approve, then 45 days later, the receipt authority is granted, assuming that the governor continues his plan with spending the money, receipt authority of the money. So we aren't approving or disapproving necessarily the entire what this represents or the program that this would be used for. We're just voicing our concern to the executive branch that we don't, if you're in negative right here, that you don't believe that this is money that needs to be, receipt authority that needs to be received from the federal government. About 45 days later, if the governor disagrees with us, then it's going to go forward anyway. That's the process. So, Director Painter, can you speak to Representative Johnson's question about opportunity cost if we do not approve this today in relation to 45 days later and potentially what might happen in the next session if we were to discuss this in a full session?
Yes, for the record again, Alexei Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So the RPL statute says that 45 days shall elapse before commencement of expenditures under the revised programs unless LBNA earlier recommends the state take part in the activity. So this RPL was submitted, I think, a little over a week ago, I think on the 17th or 18th. So 45 days after that, the governor could choose to commence with the activities of this RPL, you know, regardless of the committee's recommendation. That did happen with an RPL that was submitted on November 30th of last year, where the committee did not approve an RPL and the governor chose to go forward anyway. In this case, since the agency does have $200,000 of existing receipt authority, they may not face timing issues with that, but because essentially they would have to wait about a month from now. But the governor has also in the past indicated that, you know, they do take the recommendation of the committee seriously and won't necessarily go forward if the committee recommends it not go forward. It's not a guarantee that the government will choose to go forward. In terms of the opportunity cost of the funding, in terms, you know, what does this get us? The department has said that there are potential future funding opportunities for these communities if they have this data and they are not necessarily able to hire their own consultants, so have to gather the data. So having it done on a statewide level would allow those communities to be able to get those future funding opportunities. But I think the department may be able to speak more about what those future funding opportunities for those communities may look like.
Okay. I'll come back to you. Ms. Kohler, could you speak to the state's perspective on opportunity cost?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I had Director Old, who is our air quality director, online, who may be better able to answer that.
I see Mr. Olds has joined us. Mr. Olds, could you speak to opportunity costs?
Yeah, and I, you know, jumped in partway, so I may have missed part of the other contacts. My apologies if I repeat some information that my colleagues have already shared, but I think this funding allows for work to continue for the planning phase of these Inflation Reduction Act grant funds. They're a sort of competitive grant process that's scheduled to kick off sometime early next year. And so if we aren't granted these funds, it could significantly hamper our ability to proceed with sort of the planning phase for contract work and some of our partnership to prepare for those competitive grant processes. Which could jeopardize the access of those $4 billion federal dollars to community tribes.
Thank you, Mr. Olds. Representative Josephson, you indicated you had a question or comment.
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you. So for Mr. Olds, I guess I would like to know, have a question here about maybe so what of the information. So we're gonna do some testing and establish baseline data. And for what purpose? What are we going to use the data for? Can you help us understand that?
So these funds are typically dealt for emissions from energy sector pollutants or otherwise infrastructure projects that they need baseline information for any community to compare against to show what their proposals would do in terms of reducing those baseline emissions. This is not a, there's not a standard or a regulation. These baseline emissions are only provided to communities that aren't able to produce them themselves so that they can competitively compete against sort of other communities in these targets with projects that are eligible for those funds. Some communities like, you know, larger municipalities, Anchorage, Juneau, may have already been able to produce their own baseline data. And so if we don't have access to these resources to aid our communities that can't, they won't be able to compete. We'll leave them behind, essentially.
I think the example before you came online, the example of what has happened in Fairbanks with regarding to air quality and the federal involvement in the wood stove issue.
Sure.
I think there is some hesitation from other communities to be put in a place similar to Fairbanks. We have a lot of wood burning stove communities.
Those would be standards for national ambient air quality, and this is non-regulated pollutants, greenhouse gases. There's not a regulatory hook or action that would occur that would trigger any sort of attainment process or further regulations from this baseline information. This is purely inventories for this grant process. There's not a way that this could cause additional requirements. It's just merely taking what is large assumptions and working it down at a level that folks are able to sort of manage that data with any potential projects they might pitch for these federal dollars and compare the reductions of that work against. It's not a trigger or a trip or anything that would result in additional, you know, federal overreach or oversight, depending on how you want to put it. I say overreach, similar to Fairbanks. This is really an opportunity for folks to apply for these Inflation Reduction Act infrastructure funds.
Thank you, Mr. Olds. Could you maybe give some examples? And maybe there's already some projects out there that people are wanting to bid on. you've spoken to some potential projects. Could you give an example or a couple examples of what potential projects might be?
Yeah. The one that was pitched, I believe, from the mayor of North Pole was for co-fired power generating units, some engines that they had looked at that somehow, you know, I don't have all the project details, but were tied to some high tunnel sort of, farms, like greenhouses, and they were capturing some of the emissions from the co-fired power generating units for use in those high tunnels, essentially commercializing CO2 off of that, capturing it and using it as a product for sale. And that, you know, would prevent that from escaping the atmosphere and therefore could be eligible, as it would reduce the emissions from that targeted activity.
Interesting. Representative Josephson.
To the chair, director, what I think I hear you saying is this, in that example, this may support the continued use of coal burning energy sources for alternative reasons.
Oddly, that is.
Yeah,
I can't speak to the competitiveness of that project, but it's very unique in that way. And that is, yes, for that project, that would be the intended sort of purpose. But, you know, the emissions would be captured.
All right. And just a quick moment.
Go ahead, Representative Josephson.
Director, do you know whether these dollars, and this may be better for Mr. Painter, but if we don't take the $900,000 offered to us, will another state come into the queue and take it from us?
Yeah, I believe all states, along with tribes, have all lined up for these dollars.
Okay, thank you.
Of course they have. Okay. Any other questions online? Representative Johnson, did that answer your question? Representative Johnson, are you still with us? Take another brief of these.
Just for clarification, Director, in order for communities like North Pole to receive grants for some of the creative solutions that they have brought forward, the baseline of the greenhouse gases emissions is needed in order for them to be eligible for these grants. Is that a correct assessment?
Correct. They would have to sort of compare the reductions of their projects against something with the granular level of detail necessary for sort of competitively bidding.
Representative Gantz.
This is kind of an in-the-weeds question, but has the federal government provided an acceptable baseline for the state of Alaska for our air quality? And if the communities, after this data is collected, what would be the action toward these communities if their air quality was not considered sufficient?
So there's no sufficiency standard for communities in terms of what their actual air quality is. The difficult part becomes sort of the structure of these grants and how to apply for them. You need a certain level of detailed data for your community to adequately get a picture of how a particular project might reduce those emissions, but there's no strings attached in terms of what baseline data looks like, but a number, you know, I think Juno hired some outside consultants to produce their greenhouse gas inventories because they wanted to. This allows us to work with smaller communities that haven't made that expenditure to produce levels of detail so that they might apply for these grants. The federal government, to my knowledge, has not provided any sort of, you know, there's some very broad strokes, baseline studies and information, but it sort of requires any community in the United States to go in and parse out the details, and that's what this funding would allow us to do, is work through our partners and work with communities that are interested to help develop those reports.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any further comments or questions?
Yes, just one.
Representative Josephson.
So this is my, I think, 11th, well, it's my 11th year in the legislature, and I think 9th on this committee. Typically, when we have rejected an RPL, and I understand the statute allows for it to be implemented anyway, it's because there is a technical or other process problem. Most notoriously in May, when we accepted, May of 2020, when we accepted, $1 billion due to the COVID crisis, of funds that didn't relate to any appropriation component that existed. We were sued over that. It's typically that sort of concern. And I just wanted to make clear for the record that I don't think I've witnessed an RPL rejected on the merits of the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Vance, do
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee move the RPL 18-2024-0351 as presented.
Is there an objection? Okay. Hearing none online and seeing none in the room, then the RPL has been approved. Member Fadiz. Back on the record, just checking to make sure we got some official paperwork we need to sign on that. Next order of business is to go into executive session to receive and discuss preliminary audit, release, and procurement items. Is there an objection to going into executive session today in the room? I see none. Is there any online? Okay, seeing no objection, we will go into executive session after a brief at ease to clear the room and make sure that participants in the room are supposed to be here. Brief at ease. I'm going to step backwards to take a step forwards. The Juno LIO was not online for recording. We made this last motion. So we're going to redo the motion again for the third time, just to be clear, and in the interest of transparency and public process, so that it's all clear. And so, Representative Vance, may I have a motion to go into executive session?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee go into executive session for the discussion of matters that may, by law, be required to be confidential. I ask that the following persons remain in the room or online: the Legislative Auditor and necessary staff for the Auditor, any legislators not on the committee, and staff for legislators who are members of the committee. And just for clarification, we are going to under executive session under Uniform Rule 22.
Okay. Now we will go into executive session and we'll go off the record. Okay, we are back on the record. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, we're coming out of executive session. Today in executive session, we discussed spending on contracts related to Janus preliminary audit and the Big Game Commercial Services Board Sunset preliminary audit. And that is a preliminary audit discussion. And the reason we needed to go into executive session is because that is not a releasable audit yet. That audit will go to the administration for review and comment, and then the audit will become a publishable audit at a later date, and then it will become public record at that point. We also discussed contracts involving the evaluation of the Office of Children's Services Management Structure Request, an audit for that request, a request for that audit, sorry. And there are confidential matters that needed to be discussed within the executive session for that, and also for the legislative audit IT procurement contract. So both of those we'll be voting on here shortly. Okay, let's see here. Find my place in my trusty script here. Okay, Representative Vance, do I have a motion for the contracts?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee move and release to the Department the preliminary audit on spending on contracts related to Janus, the Department of Law, as presented.
And I'm going to pause for just a second because we're getting the cart before the horse briefly. First, I need to make sure that I still have my numbers with me because I only have three sitting in front of me. Senator Kaufman, are you still online?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Senator Wilikowski, are you still online?
Yes.
Representative Johnson, are you still online? Representative Pomaszewski, are you still online?
Yes, I am here.
Representative Kronk, have you joined us? Senator Bishop, have you joined us? Senator Kawasaki, have you joined us? Senator Hoffman, have you joined us? Senator Stedman, have you joined us? I'll go back to Representative Johnson. Are you online still? Okay, does not sound like it. We still have six members, which means we still have quorum. So, Representative Vance, will you please restate your motion?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee move and release to the Department the preliminary audit on spending on contracts related to Janus, Department of Law, as presented.
Is there any objection to the motion? Is there objection online? Seeing none, the preliminary audit is released as presented. Representative Vance for the next motion.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee move and release to the Department preliminary audit on Big Game Commercial Services Board Sunset, Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development as presented.
Is there any objection to releasing the preliminary audit? Seeing none in the room, is there any online? Hearing none online and none in the room, the preliminary audit is released. Representative Vance, do I have a motion regarding the procurement matters before us?
I move the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the legislative auditor to contract for a review of the management structure of the Office of Children's Services for an amount not to exceed $518,000.
Is there an objection to this procurement request? Seeing none, is there a request or an objection online? Hearing and seeing none, that request is approved. Representative Vance for the final procurement motion.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee authorize the Legislative Auditor to amend March 2022 contract with Barry Dunn, Smith, Neal & Parker, LLC, for information technology expertise to extend the contract for the review of the FY24 general and application controls of the state's accounting and reporting systems for an increase in original contract amount not to exceed $175,000.
Is there an objection in the room? Is there an objection online to this procurement request? Seeing and hearing none, that motion passes. Okay, and I think that brings us to our final order of business today to discuss the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority audit request. If Ms. Curtis, I'm sorry, Briefities. An audit request coming from the chair. This is in regards to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And I have asked my staff, Lauren Hughes, to bring us up to speed on this. So, Lauren, will you put yourself on the record? And
for the record, Lauren Hughes, Legislative Budget and Audit Committee 8. I'm going to read the memorandum which was distributed and is available online. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, AMHTA audit request. In response to concerns over management of the Alaska Mental Health Trust, an audit was requested in 2016. After completing the audit in 2018, Legislative Auditor concluded that the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority's Board of Trustees violated state statutes in terms of the state versus Weiss settlement by diverting $44.4 million in cash principal from the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The audit found that despite statutory requirements that trust principal be managed and invested by the ATFC, the authority's Board of Trustees suspended transfers of cash principal to the ATFC for almost 10 years. Instead of transferring cash to the ATFC for investment, 39.5 of $44.4 million was directly invested in 7 commercial real estate properties, 5 located out of state, using the trust land office within the Department of Natural Resources to facilitate the commercial real estate investment transactions and to manage the properties. A follow-up audit was requested in 2020 to evaluate the authority's corrective action, including, in part, the status of the commercial real estate investments and the authority's intent regarding future management of the investments. The audit found that the authority used trust income to restore the trust cash principal illegally diverted from the APFC and found that the Department of Natural Resources Trust Land Office continued to manage the commercial real estate investments, which were considered trust income investments after the transfer. The audit criticized this decision on the basis that the Trust Land Office did not have expertise in financial investing, particularly knowledge and expertise in managing nationwide commercial real estate investment program. The audit also raised concerns that converting trust income into illiquid assets may negatively impact the authority's ability to meet its spending goals in a down market. The follow-up audit recommended the Board of Trustees consider liquidating the commercial real estate investments or transferring the investments to the ATFC as inflation proofing.
Let me interrupt you for just one second. Housekeeping note here. We've got somebody online that I can hear your phone. Can you please check your connection to make sure that that you're muted? And I would like the record to reflect that 11:04 or 11:03 a.m. Senator Kawasaki has joined us. Ms. Hughes, please continue.
During the 2002 legislative session, the authority reported that the commercial real estate investments continued to be managed by the Trust Land Office, with the assistance of a third-party real estate advisor. Since that time, it has come to my attention, the attention of the board, that the authority's board of trustees terminated the agreement with its third-party real estate advisor. It has also come to our attention that the commercial real estate properties are not subject to independent audits, and it has been alleged that related financial information is not accurate. It has also been alleged that the trust land office has not complied with the board of trustees' approved management policies, and that their activities are not subject to prudent governance by the trustees. Given these concerns and the importance of managing the Alaska Mental Health Trust Fund for future generations of trust beneficiaries, we request an audit be approved to include the following objectives: evaluate the trust land office's compliance with trustee-approved management policies, evaluate the financial health of the commercial real estate properties, examine the board of trustees' oversight of the trust land office's operations, follow up on any other related concerns the legislative auditor identifies during the audit. That concludes the memorandum.
Thank you. And I just want to correct the record. You said 2002 legislative session. It was actually the 2023 legislative session.
Thank you for that correction.
Okay. Are there questions in the room or online regarding this request? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a process question. It looks like that there's been audits done and concluded that there was error made. Is this the best process to use our legislative authority to encourage corrective action by the board? And or at what point is it appropriate to engage the courts to resolve this?
Ms. Curtis, could you come forward and help us with this question?
Thank you for that question. And Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. So the State versus We settlement that established this whole mechanism of managing the trust establishes the Mental Health Trust Authority as the fiduciary of the fund. It is their responsibility to ensure that it's managed prudently. The legislature has its role in appropriating. The permanent fund has its role in managing the investments, and the Department of Natural Resources has its role in managing the land corpus. So everyone has their own role in this. The second audit followed up the corrective actions from the first, and we did conclude that legally, what they did as far as using trust income to reconstitute the principal that they had diverted, that was fine, except that we have some criticisms of what that can mean in the future in regards to illiquid income investments, which aren't readily available to meet the needs of beneficiaries. We also criticized, like it says in the memo, that we do not believe the Trust Land Office was the appropriate entity to manage a nationwide real estate investment program. In their response to that criticism, they highlighted this third-party investment advisor that they had that assisted them in prudently managing their investments. So it's that advisor portion that is no longer there, as far as we've been led to believe. So I hope that answers the question. I mean, everyone has their role in this, and it's really the board, the authority of the board, the trustees of the board that have that fiduciary responsibility.
And what's the timeline that you see in this particular audit?
Through the chair, we have, in addition to the sunsets that we do every year, we have some two really big ones that are in front of this that are going to be staffed with our staff, and that is Department of Revenue tax audit process and the work comp. Those are going to be two heavy lifts. So I do not see this starting next year. I see it starting in a year. So a year and a half at least before we get up and going on this audit.
Thank you.
Are there any questions online?
Yes, I have a question, Representative Tomaszewski.
Representative Tomaszewski, go ahead with your question.
So I'm concerned about these seven properties. Has there been any looking into who owned these properties and how they were purchased? Are there any connections involved with the trust folks? It sounds a little fishy to me.
Through the chair, I will send you a link to the first audit that dives really deeply into the purchase, how it came about, why it was done. We did look at ethics issues throughout all of the board's actions, and we do have some things to say. Nothing conclusively regarding legality of the purchases. Our criticism was mainly on how they were focused. They were focused on commercial real estate. They weren't diversified. They were really heavy in commercial real estate and heavy in Texas. Three of these commercial properties are in Texas. There was also a lack of documentation to show the decision process that led to these purchases in Texas, that could show that this decision, as compared to other opportunities, was a good decision. So we criticized that. We made a lot of recommendations about their investment policies. We hired an external company to evaluate those policies, and we provided a lot of feedback to them, which they did take and move forward with various corrective actions. So, again, I'll send you a link to that first audit and the second audit because it provides a lot of information about those properties.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair, Ms. Curtis, the state versus we settlement is in what year?
I know that the litigation lasted over 10 years, and I want to say it was 92.
So this is reconstituting.
Yeah, the reconstituting of the mental health trust as a result of that. And that's where the roles were really laid out. As part of the settlement, and as part of the settlement, the statutes that outline how it goes right now are incorporated into the settlement. So the state really is a bit limited in altering those statutes. Those are adopted as part of the statute. I mean, as part of the settlement.
Representative Josephson?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I support the language in the audit, but it seems a little, I'm sort of incredulous that we're having to do this. I mean, I thought everyone agreed. Well, first of all, I've been surprised that the Permanent Fund Corporation never over the last several years asked the authority, where's our money? Where's the resources you're supposed to give us every year? I don't understand that. So they've been sort of passive and sort of watched it happen, as far as I can tell. But I thought, reading media accounts and also dealing with this as a legislator, that everyone was on the same page that they shouldn't have been doing this. Well, I take that back. The authority concluded that it could, but I thought they'd been significantly or sufficiently admonished that they were going to stop. In other words, this seems a little tepid to me. I mean that with great respect, in that I thought we were beyond these inquiries and they just needed to stop doing this. I don't.
To the chair, I'd hoped that I my last audit was the last one, but unfortunately, the concerns continue to be there. And as far as the firm fund corp being passive, yes, they certainly are. They do not see themselves as having any responsibility to make sure that the money they are given is the complete and accurate money. They are, if you look at their statutes, they are an investment corporation. They view themselves as whatever money they're given, they invest. But they have no responsibility. They believe that they need to make sure the state's giving them the correct amount of money. And we got into this issue when with the prior audit finding of the $199 million that was not given to the firm fund. it is their position that they take what they're given, and that is that then they invest it. So I'm not, yes, they are passive, and that's how they view it should be.
And just as a follow-up on this, this idea of a third-party real estate advisor, that's not written in law anywhere. That's not curative. We don't. That's a nice gesture, but there's nothing that says, well, this makes everything okay, right?
There's prudent investor laws. There are laws that guide fiduciary actions on fiduciaries of, say, trust at the high level. There are the board themselves have adopted certain asset management policies that that should be governing the actions of the trust land office. So it is something, there are a lot to look into it, and that's why you have an audit request in front of you.
So if I might respond, Representative Josephson, we've got some tools at our disposal when we have an issue come up that we need more answers. One of them is an audit. Another one might be a hearing request, a committee hearing. Another one might be a lawsuit to sue on behalf of the legislature. I'm recommending that we follow up two other audits with a third audit. And as I gather more information, hold a committee meeting or committee meetings to get to the bottom of this. We've got a number of months until the next legislative session, and then the jurisdiction kind of changes from LBNA to the committees of jurisdiction. And I would assume that committee chairman at that point may want to continue that conversation during the next legislative session. Perhaps getting the ball rolling from the LBNA committee's perspective, both from an audit and from a committee hearing, might send a message that says we're serious about resolving this issue and put it to bed.
Keeps the committee from like drafting a letter, an inquiry letter, and having them provide additional information as we wait for our resources to become available so that the legislature could use as they conduct their hearings.
I too share some concerns, and on the scale of tepidity, I don't know if that's a word, but I chose not to go with a letter and go with an audit request because I figured it was less tepid than a particular letter. But I think that a committee meeting where we are scrutinizing and able to ask questions and get answers is a probably necessary thing. Are there any questions online? While I'm waiting for one of those, I'll let the record reflect that at 11:11 a.m., Representative Cologne joined us here in Vallejo. I hear no questions online. Any other questions or comments in the room? Okay, I would like to seek the will of the committee on this audit request. Representative Vance, do I have a question?
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee request an audit of the Alaskan Mental Health Trust Authority.
Is there an objection? I see none in the room. Is there an objection online? Okay, hearing no objection, the motion carries. And as our final order of business, I'll take the prerogative of the chair to do a little quick recognition. Today we have with us Ms. Linda Day. Ms. Day, I have it on a credible source here that you are soon to retire with 25 years of service to the state of Alaska. I'm not sure whether that all 25 is within the audit section. Wow, that's dedication. I just want to express my thanks, and on behalf of the state, thanks for your effort and dedication to your job for 25 years. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, with no further business coming to the committee, we will be adjourned as of 11:19 a.m. Thank you all for joining.